If you're thinking, God, these guys hardly ever make episodes anymore, you'd be mistaken. At patreon.com/youhatemovies, there are still multiple episodes of You Hate Movies delivered monthly, arguing about the latest movies, ranking directors and franchises, interacting with fan mail, and getting bent out of shape about the latest in movie news. For the price of a monthly cup of coffee, you can listen in and join the arguing. patreon.com/youhatemovies. Okay, you guys. Welcome to You Hate Movies, the podcast in which casual moviegoers, film lovers, and cinephiles argue about movies. Our expert panel of cinephiles and readers have all been to see Dune 2 and have feedback. Here on the mainstream You Hate Movies channel, we keep up with the most current of trends in the movie-going world, and right now, the most current of movie-going trends is a little-known picture called
Barbie.
Dune 2. Is it actually called Dune 2 or Dune Chapter 2?
Part 2.
Part 2?
That's what it says on the title card. Oh. Dune Part 2.
Oh, so when it shows that, like, orangey gradient and you hear, like, it says Part 2.
Yeah, Dune Part 2.
Hey. But when you look it up online, it's just Dune 2.
I'm looking at this strawberry sunset, and it is pretty good.
I have this
bubbly water.
Bellini Bliss. Oh, man. It's even better.
No, because it's got peach in it. I don't want peach.
Yeah, that's what's better about
nice.
It.
Nice.
Burr's hyped up the new flavors before everyone got here.
She was
said,
correct.
Get excited. We got new flavors.
I saw the lady at Fred Meyer. They were still like on her little, you know, box all stacked up on the little pushcart thing she was putting away.
She was putting them on display?
Yeah, they weren't out yet. They were
for
still
the
stacked
time.
Up
took
for the
fresh
first
off
time.
The press.
And I said, can I take these? And she said, please do.
Wow.
Dang.
I was like one of the first
hot
people
off the
to
presses.
Have.
You were probably right to hype them.
We're probably the first people to ever taste these flavors. They just came out the lab. They just came out the lab.
Out the lab.
So we've assembled an important team of cinephiles and one sub-casual moviegoer.
Is that
me?
Is that Abby?
Abby's on the show. Mm-hmm. She was recently crowned a cinephile after her 2024.
Wow.
That's right.
Our listeners officially crowned her as a cinephile. And one of them said, and I quote, give Abby her much deserved crown. She did ask. She said, I want to be crowned a cinephile by the end of this episode.
That's how you get it. Did Tyler ever change it? I didn't even look.
Well, I don't know. It's a good question.
I bet he didn't.
There's no way to know.
Patrick's on the show.
Yeah, I'm here.
He saw Dune 2 just like Abby did.
I did, on the big screen.
And Matt Hughes is on the show.
I saw it twice in theaters already.
Well, two times.
Double for twos.
And then we have a newcomer to the newcomer, right? You've never been on this podcast before.
Never been on it before.
Gavin Bennett. Gavin Bennett is, how would you describe yourself as a moviegoer?
You know, here's how I describe myself. I'm an easy sell. In a movie. And the only movie I've watched.
Easy.
I really am. The only movie that I've watched in theaters that I was like, why am I here? Was Cats. That was it. Otherwise, I've had a good time at the theaters. I actually walked out of No Country for Old Men. Is that what it's called?
Wow.
Why?
Because
why would you do that?
I was watching it with my grandma. And she wanted to see it. And she loved it. But I didn't love it. So I watched out. It was too graphic. Too gory.
Your grandma. No Country for like Young Men and Yes Country for Old Women.
Yeah, that's so, it.
But you did come with us to see Joyride on a whim.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I did. Made it through that one. Yeah. I don't know what else to say about
Joyride,
that.
Joyride has got to be a little more outrageous. Well, in a different way than No Country for Old. So No Country for Old Men was not enough to offend your grandma.
No, she loved it.
It was too much for your fragile sensibilities.
Too graphic.
Javier and his Ramones haircut.
Yep. He's also friend-o. In Dune.
He's
is.
Also
speaking
in Dern.
Of the best part
so
of
was Brolin.
He was the best part of
and Josh Brolin. Oh, it's a No Country reunion on Dune 2.
Wow.
Dern. Mm-hmm. One
so
and
Dern. There's dirt in the country.
But you did see Dune.
I did
Dune
see Dune
2.
And Dune 2 and really loved both of them.
But not only that, you read Dune.
I read Dune actually with all of you during COVID.
So we thought this would be appropriate.
Yeah.
Now, everyone in the room, except for, I mentioned this not to shame Abby because she is an avid reader of novels. So let's get that out of the way. But Dune is not her kind of novel, so she skipped the Dune novel.
Mm-hmm.
And even if she had read it, I don't think she would have
enjoyed it. She wasn't
wrong
to skip it.
But she saw the movie. It will play into the conversation. It's interesting to have people who have read, everybody else, you guys all read that book, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then, oh, so really quickly, Gavin, you have a hot and cold thing on the novel. What's your review of the novel?
I think my review is that I respect it for what it is, the genre that it kind of opened up. It made, you know, room for, so I'm told, things like Star Wars, which I actually think is overrated and don't really love anyway, but I can appreciate it as like,
that's a correct take.
For what it is. And so I appreciate Dune for what it was, but I feel like as I read it, I thought the first three quarters were really, really slow. And then it was sort of like the author was like, oh gosh, I've got to end this. I'm running out of time. And then everything happened in the, like the last 40 pages. And I was like, why didn't you just kind of like pull that out into the, you know, edit out some of that beginning stuff. And
that's an understandable review.
So that's what I felt.
Yeah.
Matt is a Dune head, right?
Yeah. Real Duner.
And by that, I mean, long time fan of the novels.
Yep. I read the first novel, I think probably when I was in my mid teens, and have read it many times since then, and have read all the way through God Emperor of Dune.
Which is what, five?
No, I think that's only like four.
Oh, really?
Three or four.
So you haven't read them all?
No, I haven't read a bunch. I haven't read any that the Sun wrote.
Oh, after that, is it the Sun?
I believe that's the cutoff.
Oh, wow. So if you make it to number four, he turns into a worm and then you're out?
Yeah. That
spoilers
was,
for the Dune novel franchise.
It gets weird.
Patrick, you've read the novel and now seen both movies. What would you have the stinkity review of the book.
The stinkity?
Yeah, you poo-pooed the book.
I thought it was boring.
Thank you.
I think poo-poo. I have Gavin's review. I didn't mind reading it with the crew when we all read it together and like we're checking in and doing like the book club thing. I thought that was fun.
Hmm.
And I liked elements of it, but I thought it was kind of a slog to get through.
I didn't think it was a slog, and I did read it more than once, so I guess obviously it's not that much. But I think it came to me at the right time when if you read and you're aware of science fiction, you get the idea of Dune through osmosis. You know what I mean? Like everyone talks about how it inspired a generation of science fiction writers. And even before I had read the book, and I've still not seen the David Lynch version of Dune, you know that there's sandworms in it and it has something to do with the desert and all that crap. And I remember being at Powell's, a big bookstore, and seeing like a nice old paperback copy that, you know, like the kind that grocery store paperback that you can hold in
like
your hand.
Mass market.
Yeah. And it was like a $3 used copy. And I just felt like I was really in the mood to read something world buildy and the sandworms and all that. So when I read it the first time, it really scratched that itch. If somebody was like, just try it, I don't know anyone that would love it like that if you're not in the habit of reading high, hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because it's like reading A Clockwork Orange. The first 50 pages, you're like, what is anyone saying? What the heck is anyone saying?
Yeah, this isn't real words.
Yeah, and then but then you get the hang of it and blah, blah, blah. And then
like
Gavin
freaking
said,
Duncan, Idaho. Yeah, man.
By the end of the
Duncan's
novel, it ripped. Does become more of an entertaining, like it's plotted and a story and all
and
that
I
stuff.
I liked the ending. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I agree. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like one of those things that you finish and you're like, that freaking sucks. You at least are like, well, now I've got that in my brain. So
yeah, it wasn't
I've
a waste of time.
Checked that pop culture thing off my list.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But since the world is so complex and layered and multi-dimensional, it does make the viewing experience of Dune kind of subconsciously effortless. Whereas I've talked to lots of people at this point, Burrs included, who were like, man, that was great. What was it? What happened? Who was that? What is the point? Who was the good guy? Who was the bad guy? Another friend of ours said she had seen it twice. And she's like, I don't even know what it means. I don't know what the ending was supposed to imply. I don't know who the good guy or bad guy was. I don't know like who those people were. She just enjoyed it for the spectacle of it. And she's like, did you follow it? I'm like, well, I did, but is it just because I've seen the movie? So start with your review, Burrs, your nutshell review, framed in that way. Having not read the book, just hearing nerds around you talk about it, you go and see it. What did you think of the movie, and did it make sense?
Yeah, I really liked it. loved it even. I think I like it for more of like the beauty of it, less like the story. I mean, the story's fine, but to me it was like a wonder to behold, like the
when you say beauty, you mean actual visual.
The actual visuals, like the cinematography, the costume design, the set design, that sort of stuff, I think is really interesting. That's what entices me. I would say I did not really understand what was happening in the second movie. The first one I did. The second movie, I was a little confused what was happening and came home and said, so I don't understand, is he good or bad? And
that means you got it.
That does mean I got it. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I disagree.
Okay.
But we'll get to that in a second. Go ahead.
I think that was mostly what I, yeah, there, I think there's a lot of the like different people groups that I don't really understand, like what their, all their dynamic is, that I think is probably lost on me since I didn't read the book. But I got enough of it to like,
sure.
Get
more
it
like
overall.
Completely in the weeds. The yeah. whole time. Patrick, what was your tweetable fresh rotten review of Dune 2?
I loved it as well. I think I have almost or a very similar review to Abby's of my favorite part was the cinematic experience. We saw it in a theater that was super loud.
Because you almost gave the first one a stinkity.
I did. I did. Wow. But this one I thought was just super. I like this one better. I thought it was really fun to watch when he's riding the worm and all. It was one of the most fun theatrical experiences because it was just so loud and you... That filmmaker is incredible because you feel like you're on that thing with him. And so I love that part. And yeah, afterwards we were watching it and then I kept like thinking, I was asking Matt like, that was that in the book? Cause I don't remember like, did Chani do that then or this, or, you know, like little details that I was, you know, it starts to blur. Like, did that happen in the book or am I putting the characters that I see and, you know,
yeah.
they go back and forth, but I liked it. Dune 2, fun.
Matt Hughes, what did you think of Dune 2?
I really loved it. I think that they made some, in some areas small and in other places relatively significant changes from the book, some of which I can appreciate why they did, and other ones I am kind of, I have some nitpicks, but I don't think that Denis made a bad movie, and I don't think he started now. Made another cracker of a movie.
A cracker, a real humdinger.
Old Denis.
Gavin Benet. What did you think of Dune 2 as a reader, having seen the first one? What'd you think?
I don't have much to add. I really, really liked it. I think the cinematography was great. I thought the visuals were great. I thought most of the acting was great. That would be where some of my nitpicks would be, but I really loved it. I'd see it again, and there's not much about it that I would change.
Oh, okay.
That's a positive review.
Yeah, very positive.
To me, it's a little bit like the experience of the thing I can compare it to experientially is Christopher Nolan's Inception when that movie came out. I went to see it with a big group of people. Everyone was seeing this movie. It was very, very popular. And it was a big hit.
It was talk of the town.
It was the talk of the town, and that's the point. Everyone was talking it up so much that it began to sound as if the movie had absolutely nothing wrong with it in the whole world. It's the greatest cinematic achievement of all time. I think that
it was.
I really enjoyed Dune 2, liked it a lot, gave it a very high rating. I have a few bigger nitpicks with it. I don't think that it's probably not as good as everyone says it is. That's my review.
Come on,
it's real good. Probably not that good.
It's probably not that good.
No.
The nitpicks you guys that love it so much are gonna say would make it feel like, if that's your nitpick, then it can't be that great, right?
All right, yeah, let's start with the nitpicks because they're more fun than the that everyone's sitting around talking about what we've everyone in the whole world's already said about, you know, and Abby and Patrick kind of summarized it in terms of sheer spectacle and big screen cinematic experience. You know, everyone loves to say this about just about every movie that comes out, but this movie's made to be seen in a theater. It really is. Yeah. This movie's made to be seen in a theater. Mm-hmm. It's a theatrical experience, and we don't have many directors at the moment, with the exception of Christopher Nolan and maybe Quentin Tarantino when he decides to make a movie here and there, that make big, huge, big budget blockbuster movies that are designed to like thrill. And, you know, usually the like smart, sophisticated filmmakers make indie films that don't have hundreds of million dollars in their budget to wow you in the theater. Mm. And the people who do have hundreds of millions of dollars in the budget don't make smart, sophisticated art house films. They make movies for Disney and Marvel. And
hey, but you know, George Miller is going to make another good theater movie next month.
He is, yeah, yeah. So every now and then you get a rare treat. This is one of those rare treats where it's like a very grown-up movie. It's very intelligent. It's based on an existing, you know, it's an adaptation, but the director's vision is all over it. And I agree with Matt. I have not seen Denis's Spanish film, the film in Spanish, but I've seen all his English language films. They're all very good. I don't think this one is the best one.
What film is in Spanish?
He made a film prior to...
Is it Spanish or French?
I thought he was French.
French, pardon me, French.
Prior to Enemy, right? Enemies.
No, Enemy came out after Prisoners.
What?
That's right, yeah.
That seems so strange.
But his filmography is very impressive. And even if Dune 2 is not his, you know, if someone argues it's not his best movie, in terms of like scale, they keep getting bigger and better.
Oh, yeah.
So that's exciting. I'll start with this nitpick because we're going to argue about it. I thought that Timothée Chalamet was not just not great in the role. I thought he was distractingly terrible. So much so that several big scenes were, I'll go as far as to say, ruined because of his horrible performance. The one that comes to mind, you guys can tell me what you think, because I know some of you are going to say, well, I didn't even notice, was when he interrupts the big meeting of the Fremen to get on stage and be the Messiah and start predicting the future left and right. It, to me, was like laughable high school drama club level acting.
Oh, that was good.
And no, he's such
a one of the highlights of his acting in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
Was that part.
And he's such a wienery presence that he was not believable.
He couldn't pull off the shots. There are so many where like he's walking towards the camera and the lady's yodeling in the background, you know?
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be awesome and you're just like, nah, it's not quite awesome.
Hey,
it's like your friend's little brother that just found out about skateboards.
He ain't got no butt in that still suit.
Hey, that's Peter Nicky Foroff was like, this guy's supposed to lead us. Man, I wouldn't follow him. He's got no glutes.
Yeah. He can't deadlift himself.
He can't.
Okay, maybe they should have padded his suit. But I disagree. I thought
Tell
he
me
was
more.
Extremely believable. He's supposed to be young. And
his age is fine. I have no problems with his age.
With age comes maturity. So
yeah,
it's not.
You ain't never seen a 17-year-old that can do good.
It's not that he's playing the character as immature. That would be fine too. It's his acting that is not good.
No, I liked it.
Oh,
he's more believable in this than he is in Wonka. Checkmate. Let me tell you.
Oh man, Wonka's bad.
I've only seen that trailer for Wonka, and he seemed really terrible in that.
Hey, he's stinky in that. He's better as Paul Muad'Dib. Usul. Mm.
I think he. Don't Look Up is the only movie I've seen him in that I wasn't like, God, that's not.
Oh,
bad.
He was funny in that.
He was funny.
Yeah, he was.
And he's playing like a bro-y teenager
probably
dummy
himself.
Exactly. And I was like, so he's being himself. And I said that I thought someone who could play young and vulnerable and immature, like Tom Holland or what's the guy from
Chris Abbott.
I feel like Tom Holland is too. Like handsome superhero looking to me, like he's too like.
No, you've seen him in Devil All the Time.
But he's still very like
clean Cherry.
Cut.
In both those movies, he has demonstrates a range.
Yeah.
that Timothée Chalamet does not have. He doesn't have any range as an actor. He's like, it's really hard, bro. Being this Messiah, man.
No, he looked at
I'm about to ollie over this worm.
He looked at his hand.
It's going to be lit.
And then he made it go sideways. Yeah. He was like, there's so many
He's like, hold on,
paths.
Babe. Going to check my TikTok before I get in this worm.
No.
Very, very Gen Z.
Not that bad.
Yeah. Not only was it like tolerable, I thought it was actually really good. In fact, better than the first movie. But maybe that's just his character. Yeah, I like him. I like him in general, but I liked him in the movie. I'm not like
what are you,
the biggest fan.
You're a stank about actors sometimes.
I was trying to sit out of this one.
What do you think?
I really love Timmy. I think he's great. I think he's great. And I don't know that he did a great job in this one.
Oh, there was a twist.
What was a twist?
Twisty twist. I felt like
a worm. Part of it, I understand what Burz is saying, and I actually agree with you. I think part of his appeal in some of those scenes is that he isn't the like macho, strong, dramatic kind of character. But I also feel like I agree with Josh what you're saying. Like it would have been okay if he chose that to do it the way that he did it. He did, but he didn't. It just was automatically what he was.
Seems like that's just the best he could do.
And yeah, I felt myself cringe more than I found myself begin to buy in. And I would agree as well, actually, with that scene with the emperor.
Yes, the emperor.
Yeah, at the very end, where I was like,
when he stamps
take
his foot.
Your daughter.
Yeah, well, that whole.
I'll totally smash that like subscribe button on that daughter.
When he fights Elvis, I was like, I don't know, like that whole situation.
Evil Elvis.
Hey, that knife fight with Elvis was good.
That was good.
I believe Timmy. I believe I was like, you're tactical enough to get stabbed in the shoulder and then pull out the knife of your own gut and stab him.
See,
good.
It was.
I believe you, Tim.
That scene was great, and it's a testament to how good everything else is for me personally. That I disliked this performance as much as I did and still liked the movie as much as I did. Because even that seems great, but when he does the like, may your knife break and shatter, I was like, oh God.
Chip and shatter.
Yeah.
Stop.
I actually was rolling my eyes.
Like I do feel like he...
He's not always the mumble rapper character that he plays on SNL.
Yeah,
when
but
he's
behind
on,
it is.
He kind of leans into his own like, aura a little bit.
I feel like if we're going to talk about bad performances.
Yeah, I was going to say he's not the worst performance.
Austin Butler was the most distracting.
I agree.
Cringy about...
I agree.
Not the entire time.
You described it as uneven, Burz, and I thought that was accurate.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, my clearest feedback for him would be it felt like he didn't have... Like, it almost felt like you knew which scene they filmed first, and they filmed them all out of order, because his accent kept changing. Like, sometimes it was, like, almost Irish, and then sometimes it was, like, totally American, and then sometimes it was kind of Spanish, and I was like,
yeah,
what's happening?
Yeah, he didn't have it worked out all the way, it sounded like.
Yeah, and I know he was, like, trying to imitate the Baron a little bit, which was important for the character, but also felt it didn't... I don't know. In the same way with Timmy, it kind of fell flat because... He wasn't really like choosing.
I agree completely, even though it didn't bother me nearly as much as Chalamet. Probably because he's not in it as much and not as crucial to everything as Paul's character is. But the Fade, is this his name?
Fade Rautha.
Yeah, Fade Rautha. It was like clearly this guy thought, you know, I'm going to create this iconic villainous thing. And when you watch an actor disappear into some villain roles are the most interesting and entertaining, you know,
right.
Like if it's Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter or Heath Ledger as the Joker
Hugh Grant
or something.
In Paddington 2.
Hugh Grant is in Paddington 2.
That's good.
No, really, there's something like, oh, they're doing it so good.
Yeah.
But when we can see them performing,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As opposed to just like, it's not Anthony Hopkins, that's Hannibal Lecter, that's the Joker.
Like Stellan Skarsgård in this as the Baron.
That's
a great point.
That's
in
Bill's
fact,
dad.
He's probably he and Javier Bardem are the most convincingly embodied characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Because you don't stop and think, oh, man, Austin Butler is having a hard time with his accent. You know, that's what you think when you're watching Fade. When you're watching The Baron, you don't go like, well, there's Skarsgård in a fat suit.
Right.
Nope. You just watch The Baron. So I agree. I thought that the blown out gladiator thing didn't work for me.
You're I like that part.
Yeah, y'all have said that before about how you didn't like the black sun. And I was like, man, it was so cool. Although, here's what I will say. Now, having watched it the second time.
You hated it.
No, I'm worried that there's some inconsistencies because it changes their skin to that super pale white when they're in the sunlight. It also changes the color of some of their clothes, like the Baron's robes and then like the Ben Gesserits that come in. They're in the shade and they're wearing black and then they come into the sunshine and then it changes it to white. And I'm like, oh, cool. It's like a negative effect. That makes sense because it's the same with the fireworks when they're going off in day and night. But all the people in the crowd who are wearing black and Austin Butler, who's wearing that like black leather armor, that doesn't change. And I was like, wait, is it only silk that gets changed? What are the rules for the black sun?
You don't know because you hadn't been
there. Doesn't matter. Different planet, different rules. Man.
Oh, okay, cool. Hey, but you know, it looked cool in H.R. Geiger-y in like the corridor and in her room and stuff when she's like giving him the Gom Jabbar test. I was like, hey, that looks cool.
Set design. It's
actually Geiger, and it was very Geiger-y.
Geiger. And like the checking for radiation.
Yeah, like the Geiger counter.
Yeah, just clicking around.
And then to the point of who's who and did Abby interpret it correctly and all that, let's get into book spoilers.
Abby got it.
I thought that the decision to change the ending... I'm not so precious about the book. I don't care if they change a lot about the book, whatever. The book's the book. The movie can be the movie. That's fine. But I didn't like these changes in particular. I didn't like that the movie, to me, didn't seem like it had the courage to depict the whole story as a tragedy. It left it kind of being like, well, he had to do what he had to do. And the audience could still like Paul.
Right, he's still going to be a hero and go do cool stuff.
Yeah, he's doing like, and it's so sad for him. It's so tragic that he has to do this thing, but he did it to save these people. The book makes it very clear that he wanted to stop the jihad and then ends up inadvertently keeping it going. He is so hungry for power, he becomes consumed by his quest for power, that he becomes corrupted by power. It's like one of those heavy-handed Zootopia things. Like, I get it. Power corrupts everybody. Now he's corrupt. Chani is going to have to become a concubine, just like his mom was a concubine to a powerful politician. She won't have real love and family, even though they had a kid together. And you end up being like, he sucks when you finish the book. He sucks. And the story's sad because now it's still going to happen. And he got corrupted in the process. The movie ends on this note that's kind of like, oh, that's tough. He had to do what he had to do. But girl power, she rides away on a worm. What's
she
up with that?
Out, man.
I feel like it was still very power corrupts heavy. It was just a little more up in the air. Like, is she going to leave him? Is she not? Maybe she just needed a moment to think about it.
Right. It was a bit more like, look at this typical man choosing the emperor throne of the universe over true love. Mm. And thank goodness for feminism. And she can go ride that worm instead of the other worm.
Yeah, I was about to say, every time I say ride the worm, it sounds like euphemism.
She's not going to ride that worm no more.
Yeah, it made it seem like the whole prophecy thing was for him to be the hero and save everybody. Like, he was writing the prophecy to become the hero.
Yeah, the
and
movie then depicted it as if he had done it successfully.
Right, he becomes the hero at the end, saves, and then he's going to keep going on being a hero at this point.
He's like Iron Man. He did the thing he had to do. It's just sad it had to be the way it had to be.
And it's like, yeah, but you went to the South knowing that billions were going to starve. Even that line, like, take them to paradise, you're like, you mean kill them. Like, that's what, when he says that to the Fremen at the end, when they're going to go into space and take down the Landstrat, you're like, yeah, he means murder everyone. Like, why is he being, he's an anti-hero. He's a bad guy that loves death and his own place in the universe.
Yeah, when I was watching it, I feel like I was seeing him, or I was like frustrated at Chani. Like, why is she not like on board? Like, I feel like I was like so on board with like his, what he was doing.
A reasonable argument that, and our friend Peter, who's been on the podcast before, kept bringing up that in the novel, she doesn't object to him being Messiah at all. In the book, she's so been out of shape about it. In the beginning, it makes sense. Fine. She's like a Fremen atheist or whatever. She doesn't believe in the Fremen Bible or whatever.
A Fratheist.
Yeah. They keep saying, you know, that great, you know, as written, and she's rolling her eyes. Oh, this story is blah, blah, blah. It's clearly meant to, you know, mirror the thing that we still have going on today. But the more that he rises to power, at least before the conclusion of the movie, it's totally in her best interest and the best interest of her people.
Right, all these prophecies all this are coming happening. True.
Yeah.
Like, stuff is working out.
Everything's working out. In fact, to the point that it's going as good as it possibly can when he gets up there and is reading the future and his sad little teen drama play that he does. And and she's so furious that she storms out. It's like, why? Why is she so much? She's like, nobody listen to him. Like, why would you stop them? Mm. This is exactly what you've wanted the whole time. She
the
just
entire
doesn't
time
want
we've
that
known
way.
Her, we want it. She wants this one goal. It's happening, and she's like, stop.
And
it
her
make sense.
And her beef at one point is like, oh no, the Lysan Ar Gaib has to be Fremen, and then she like puts the Fremen into him. Like, she makes him Fremen by marrying him and, like... They make that, have that sandy kiss on the dune, and he's like, maybe I can be equal to you, and then she Fremens him up.
She Fremens him right up.
She Fremens him
there
in.
There was that awkward PG-13 post-coitus
so
scene
bad.
Where they're, like, in the desert, touching noses, breathing hot and heavy in their faces.
Ugh. I'm like, y'all stink in there.
I know.
Oh,
I was like, gross, man.
You're all
aren't
gross.
You done? Get off each other.
In a still suit, y'all are peeping and pooing in that.
And you know they don't like to waste that
good.
Water.
Nah.
They don't like you to waste that water.
That's right.
They were wasting water all over the place.
Yeah, they were. Well, no.
I meant from sweat.
Oh.
The still tents, you remember that you can drink all your own nasty sweat and stuff?
Oh, right.
Out of the tents.
But she was also kind of wishy-washy because at some points she would be like excited, like when he was getting his name and I don't know, she was kind of like happy.
Well, she liked him being integrated into the people.
And then... She'd be like,
but she got to draw a line
like
somewhere.
It.
Yeah,
she
whenever just, he did the prophecy thing, she didn't like that stuff.
But
like
why?
It.
Why didn't she? Other than know. At the beginning, it makes sense. But she should. It seems like it would have made the most sense for her to be like, well, I don't believe it, but whatever.
You think it's because she was worried she was going to lose him? Like, you think it was motivated by
maybe
love?
There's a lot of stuff in this movie that is very much unfinished, you know, because part 3 is going to come out. So I wonder how much of this will be. After we see part 3, we're like, oh, I get it. He changed it to do this or that, or it landed somewhere. Because this is not a conclusive ending. It's not supposed to be.
Yeah, it was very cliffhanger.
I don't know. It was supposed to be a conclusive ending. The book ended conclusively, and he had not planned to write any more books.
I know, but the filmmaker made it a trilogy.
Yeah,
so
knowing
he,
full well that Dune Messiah exists.
He knows that a third movie's coming, so I wonder what that... Because all the Jesuits got... The one got pregnant.
Yeah, Jessica.
She's got the...
Oh, the other...
She's got evil Elvis's baby.
Yeah, that's
James
right.
Bond's girl.
Anti-Paul.
Anti-Paul.
Yeah. Anti-Paul. She was in it for 5 seconds.
Anti-Paul.
Like, okay, great.
Yeah, Anti-Paul. Anti-Paul. Anti-Paul is up there. Yeah, and you know, Anya was in it as a grown-up baby.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a split second.
Just for a split second.
Yeah, I mean, I hesitate to get y'all going on it, but we did a Patreon episode recently where... Abby started calling for her head on a platter.
I did not.
Wow. She exists.
Maybe
in
I need
the world.
To retract some. She's fine. I'm glad.
Well, that is definitely the opposite of what you said
I'm
before.
I'm glad that she exists. No, so she generous. Was the worst part about this. She's just so hammy.
Mm-hmm. She did not
the
do 10 anything.
Seconds that she was in it, the way she turned her head and flicked her eyes, I was oh my God.
She does in everything that she's in, starting in The Queen's Gambit or whatever it was, it's like the pursed duck lips and the wide eyes and then that like...
How do you know that that's just not like her face?
Maybe that's how her face looks. Maybe.
Because I've seen her in other things, in like pictures.
What other thing does she do that in?
all the other stuff that she's in.
The Furiosa trailer.
I was asking Abby that last time. I was like, well, what do you not like? And then she just kept saying, no, she don't like her.
I feel like the only good thing that she was in was The Witch. She was younger. She had less of a chip on her shoulder. She wasn't like big Hollywood. So she didn't have like, she didn't have anything to prove.
Hey, she was good as Princess Peach.
I loved her in Thoroughbreds. I thought she was even better.
Oh, she was fine. That was early too, though. Yeah. That was early too.
Honestly, one of my biggest beefs is, and this is not just with her, it's with other actors. If y'all are living on a desert planet eating spice, don't let your hygienist whiten your teeth that much before you shoot that day, because it's really distracting.
You know,
when
their
teeth are too white.
They're not going to let these beautiful Hollywood actors have cruddy teeth.
No, you just paint them a little bit.
Yeah, man.
Pull
just put
dye on them.
Have your glam person.
Some spice spots.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I just need there to be less of a contrast between the dirt on your skin and the whiteness of your teeth.
Mm. Some spice stains. Mm.
Takes me out. It's hard to suspend.
Yeah, that's
my
a good critique.
Disbelief.
Mm. I can't believe that y'all think she was the worst part of the movie. She just turns into the frame. She was on set for.
I was annoyed
half
that she was even there.
The third one's gonna be unbearable if she's in it a lot.
She's gonna ruin Furiosa.
Even about that. I mean, about like in Doom Messiah, Aaliyah is so pivotal. And now we know that it's Anya Taylor-Joy, and I'm like, yeah, but what if it was like a better
anybody
person?
Else?
Like no. Who would you rather have in there?
I'd rather have.
I'd rather have Selena Gomez.
How about?
Okay, don't be ridiculous.
Stop this thing.
Yeah, is it not Dakota Fanning? The other Fanning?
Oh,
Elle
yeah,
Fanning.
Elle Fanning.
Could have been really good.
Elle Fanning is great.
What about the girl that's
that would be so
looks
silly.
Like Megan? She would be good.
Who's Megan?
I know the girl from Black Coat's daughter.
Oh,
not
Kerna.
I don't know. Emma.
No, Lucy Boynton.
Not
Roberts.
The actual Black Coat's daughter.
No, the friend, the awkward school friend.
See, all these people would be great.
No, she would be fine. Not Elle Fanning. That's a terrible idea.
Uh-huh, man.
Right. What about good. Whoever played
Demon?
Whoever played Wednesday, she'd have been good.
No, stop. Yeah,
what's her name?
She's going to be in Beetlejuice.
Jenna Ortiz.
Yeah, I think she'd have been great.
I haven't seen her in anything except for the promotions for Wednesday. But the promotions for Wednesday, to me, have created a situation, a real Hamilton situation.
I've never seen Hamilton either.
But I hate its guts. I abhor. I abhor.
It's actually Jenny Ortega.
Jenny, I thought.
That's okay. I said Denis Villeneuve was Spanish earlier. So,
oh no.
I hate Hamilton's guts with a passion I can't contain within myself, to the degree that it's made some of our listeners upset. Then they've asked me to stop hating on Hamilton if I haven't seen it, and I refuse. I refuse to stop hating on it.
I've seen it. It's stupid. Hate on it all you want.
That's happening with Wednesday.
Yeah,
I've never seen it. I've just seen the Netflix autoplay ads for it, and I'm like, that's so embarrassing that this exists in the world.
Yeah, it was fine.
It's like Hot Topic is on my TV. They sponsored a show. And why from this IP?
Hey, my teenage daughter,
you know,
who it's aimed at, loved it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the demographic.
Teenagers.
It's not for you, old man.
Hey, well, I want it to be.
Jenny,
yeah, I feel left out.
Jenny, she shined in Yes Day.
Oh.
Remember Yes Day?
She was also in...
No, we don't.
Okay.
That movie... not Pearl. What was the one before Pearl? X?
X. Yeah, she was an X.
She was an X.
She was an X?
Yeah. She's the...
She's one of the victims?
She's like the director's girlfriend. You know, the nerdy director.
We're talking about Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday. She's an X.
I really enjoyed X. That was great.
She was in Scream 6.
Pearl was even better.
She was in the
no,
correct like a babysitter movie.
What babysitter?
Listen,
movie?
The point is when I saw Anya Taylor Tanya's
ATJ
turn around at the camera, I says to myself, I says, "Oh, great, she's gonna be in this."
Oh man,
that's good. That's reassuring. Mm-hmm. She can actually bring some acting chops to this movie that's been bogged down by bad acting.
I feel the same way about Jason Momoa when he was in the first one. I was like,
he was a little Aquaman. He was a little Aquaman.
He's a little, but I think the character was needed.
So is Duncan Idaho.
Yeah, he didn't bother me. I like Duncan Idaho.
I thought Brolin was good in this. I always like seeing Bautista.
Hey man, Bautista was great.
Oh yeah, he
Bautista
was great.
Actually played. He doesn't have a lot of lines to work with, and he played that character with a sometimes not so subtle, but a lot of sublety.
Yeah,
that like you know, he had to do a lot of acting with his face,
with his head wrinkles
and his head wrinkly, his wrinkly head.
You know who else was good?
It really bothered Burrs
the Reverend
during
Mother.
A Knock at the Cabin.
Oh. Jessica.
Yeah, she was. Fantastic.
She's great,
dude.
She is great.
Rebecca, what's her name?
Ferguson.
Yes. There you go.
Oh yeah,
I love her.
She's in that Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah,
and she's in Silo. Did you guys watch Silo?
Oh,
she
that
was,
show.
Yeah,
that was the only area of the film where the director was fine with depicting that the characters have become corrupt was Jessica.
Yeah.
She just was straight up saying out loud
to
whispering
her
to her fetus, I'm going to corrupt these people.
Yeah. I'm going to get those.
They can hear me.
See those women and cripples over there? I'm getting them first.
See, but even me, I didn't get that because I, for all I knew, she was corrupting the bad people.
Hmm.
So I don't
the
know.
Bad Fremen?
I don't know. I just didn't get it.
What makes a bad? What makes
I didn't
a Fremen
know that she
bad?
Was bad. I don't know.
Yeah, she,
I didn't know
she was
talking
clearly
about.
Trying to. She knew
she
that
was
it was
Machiavellian.
A, that they made up the you know the Messiah mythos, and at this point in the movie, you know that there isn't really a Messiah. It could be anyone because they just need to ensure that the possibility they can make good on this lie they concocted. Is out there, so I was like, "Oh, this Paul guy might not work out. Go get pregnant from this other dude
from the anti-Paul,
from Antipa, and then but then Paul is so sympathetic, and the viewer's almost like, well, I don't know, is he good or is he bad?
I don't. I think there's too much. If you haven't read the book, and I didn't revisit the first movie before, but there's a lot of. Going on with the Bene Gesserits and the things that they believe and the stuff
the
that they're trying to do.
The viewers can't see this, but she's doing a lot with her hand right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of gesticulations.
So I was just not fully understanding everything she was doing. I was just enjoying looking at it.
Her face tattoos.
Bene and the Jets.
How'd they get her on that worm, man? How'd they get her off the worm?
That's the biggest question. How do they get on and off the worms? Fine. But how did they get pregnant Jessica in a little taxicab basket? On and off that worm. That makes no sense whatsoever.
I think she was just, here's my theory.
And it's not
someone
safe.
Gets on first and it's they start, not. They like have rain type things where they kind of, and
sure,
then
the
they put
hooks.
Her on a different like dune
mm-hmm.
and then she's standing and then they kind of ride it up to where it just kind of like surfaces right.
Why
where
not
she's
just
standing.
Depict it to where they can stop it? Why not depict it to like, whoa, ho, ho, you know, and then the worm stops. And they get on.
Then we wouldn't be having these questions.
Hmm.
It's not like that'd be a hard thing for
the
them to animate.
It's also like the worms.
They just type in on their computer, worm stop.
Worm stop.
And the AI.
But they don't have eyes as well, right? So the worm, in theory, could be rolling over at any point. Like, is
well,
there,
that's what the maker hooks do. They irritate. They irritate the
those
weird
true.
Like Mr. Snuffleupagus nostrils that they have on there, and so that's why it's like it keeps that as far away as it can from the
that's
sand.
Fair. Yeah, up in there. Okay,
because in the David Lynch Dune, you know, Kyle MacLachlan gets up there and then he throws a rope down, and all the other Fremen run and climb up the side of it, and then there's this sweet guitar lick from the band Toto.
From the Africa band?
Yeah, dude. They did the music for David Lynch's Dune. The whole soundtrack is awesome.
So let's just end by saying what you think your favorite sandworm is. This Dune, David Lynch's Dune, because I'm sure you've seen at least what the sandworms are like in that. Tremors or Beetlejuice?
I mean, it's Beetlejuice, obviously.
It's Beetlejuice.
Of course, it's freaking Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice has the best sandworm.
I don't think Gavin's ever seen Beetlejuice.
I think I've saw Beetlejuice part of it like maybe once as a kid.
Part of it maybe once.
Of all the movies you just listed, I haven't heard of the third one.
You've never heard of you've not even heard of Tremors.
No, I've never even heard of it.
What?
Oh my gosh, it's a Kevin Bacon
it's masterpiece. It's like a 90s.
Great. Well, the only movie I've seen of that list. Is Dune. So it's going to be Dune for me.
At patreon.com/youhatemovies, there are still multiple episodes of You Hate Movies delivered monthly. arguing about the latest movies, ranking directors and franchises, interacting with fan mail, and getting bent out of shape about the latest in movie news. For the price of a monthly cup of coffee, you can listen in and join the arguing. Patreon.com/YouHateMovies.